Chick-fil-A or to Dayton, why we wouldn't leave them in high school any longer than necessary. My own feeling, while I haven't been to those schools, why just from what I read and what friends say, why I just feel that the less they're in that environment, the better. Mm-hmm. I think Covington and Pickway and Bradford and these smaller schools, there's some influence there, but I think it's a smaller school makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. How large is Pleasant Hill? That's probably fairly small.
Yes, I don't know what the total enrollment is there. Mm-hmm. It's one of the smaller schools. There's talk of uniting three schools, Covington, Pleasant Hill, and Bradford, together. There used to be talk, consolidating that. I don't know if that ever done. I think that they've decided against that, although Bradford and Pleasant Hill are still, I think, in a bind as to whether they can continue to always meet the state standards or not, because the state standards seem to keep going up, and these schools are small, and I guess they can't afford to to do what all the state would like to see done. Now, I would suppose that if those three schools would unite and make one big school, why our members here, all the plain people in this community, including the horse and bucket people, would be faced with a problem they'd feel like they have to do something about. Try to get their children exempted after the first year of high school, or make sure they finish by correspondence or something like that. They'd be faced with that problem more than the other day. The smaller schools make that simpler.
Uh-huh. About going on to college, then that problem is just compounded, I suppose.
Well, yes. I imagine that a lot of us don't give much thought to the influence of college. Some of us who read more and who know college people, why we feel like that the problems are only greater in college than they are in high school. Well, maybe that's my imagination, I don't know. But
yeah, I imagine. I know I was talking to Dr. Miller about how hard it was for him to go to medical school. Be away from a congregation.
Yeah. Now, I think that if a young man or woman has had a change of life, that we call it, had a conversion, and are members of the church and have proved themselves stable, and by the time they come to the decision of whether to go to college, I think that plays a lot of difference in the people's thinking, whether or not that person had ought to go on to school or not. Mm-hmm. You take a youngster that has shown no interest in religion and when they're faced with that, we usually recommend they get a job as soon as they can and something like that. Start making their own living right away.
Right. Are you currently now, in the printing trade or farming trade or both?
I work at the printing trade ever since 1958. I've been in the printing trade. And I work at a large commercial shop here in Pickway Printing. Mm-hmm. And just in the last couple of years, I've been getting together equipment to do a part-time job here at home. I don't expect... I'm not depending on it to become a full-time thing. I kind of want to specialize in certain kinds of printing, and I'd like to do religious printing. Doesn't have to be altogether that. The project we're doing now is a cookbook. The wife has collected recipes from sisters all over the United States and some from Brazil, because we have some members living down there.
How'd they get down there?
Well, a cousin of mine went down, heard of some Mennonites living in the interior near Brasilia. So he went down just on a visit, and he liked what he saw there. So several others went to look the place over, and so my cousin sold out first and moved. And then we have 18 members there now, PBS.
What's the town called?
Brasilia is the new capital.
Oh, I see. They're living right in Brasilia?
No. They're really about 300 miles from Brasilia, but that's the only city, you know. There is another right good-sized town within about 20 miles of where they live. But then it would be small compared to Brasilia. But I think it's large enough, has a hospital. Mm-hmm. And one or more medical doctors there. I don't know how many. It's not a large town, but it has everything, I guess.
Are they farming down there?
Yes, sir, farming. That's probably one reason, they say, it's one reason why they went. They wanted to see their young people be able to afford to begin farming. Now, they are hoping, though, that more will move down and make it a large enough group that they can seek, the young people can seek their companionship within the group. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a problem if they don't. The Mennonites won't associate at all with them. Because of that, the Mennonites are cordial, but they won't let their young people associate. And outside of that, it's just Portuguese and Indians around, you know, that are a mixture of Portuguese and Indians and the poor people that live around there. And there is some signs that they're not as happy as they were, because they had hoped before now more would move than what has moved. The Mennonite settlement is over 100 people there now, and they're getting along good. They're kind of self-sufficient to keep their own faith and everything.
Well, now, you said your wife's making a cookbook. Are there very many recipes that are German that come out from that?
Oh, you can't tell by the name, I don't think, and maybe, I don't know if you could tell by the recipe itself or not. I'm not that good on it. Uh-huh. I set all the type for it, but I still can't. I know I got hungry a lot of times setting the type.
Yeah. do you know of any, I guess all of your ancestors came from Germany originally. Do you know of any customs, say, that have survived that perhaps might have come from Germany?
No, I can't think of any. I would say that we're Americanized pretty much.
Mm-hmm. I think it came from pretty much. Okay. Now, as far as restrictions go, about secret societies, political clubs, the church's stand is still...
Mm-hmm. Well, we're still uh-huh. disapprove of that. There is one thing, there may be some difference of opinion among us, voting at the public elections for political offices. I feel like the majority of us don't vote. There probably is a minority that does. And but then it's been that way for a good many years back. There's been a few that felt like that in a democracy, why it's different than being under a king or something, that the individual can have more and has some obligation there. But the most of us, I think, feel that that is still participating in civics to the extent that if we vote in favor of one man and he gets in office, we ought to be willing to support all that he stands for. And if he would ask our young men to go off and bear arms and kill their fellow men, why, that's one thing we could not do. So they think it's safer to not vote to put anyone in office in the first place. Mm-hmm. And just not get involved even that far. I think the majority of us yet would feel that way.
What about local elections, like school board?
Types? Well, I don't think we vote on that. Best for me to say on that would be that there may be difference of opinion, and maybe some would think that's all right. That you're not. Tying in with and obligating yourself in any way, the lower down on the local level these things are, the less you're obligating yourself. That's to something that would be unscriptural. That's probably the way more of us would feel. There has been localities in Kansas, I know, and maybe other places where we had members that served on the school board. but I've lately heard about that. I want to learn more about it, where it was at, and how they feel today on it, things, and I just haven't looked into it yet. Mm-hmm. Some of those things interest me too. I'd like to know more about.
Are there any restrictions on home furnishings, types of homes or things?
Well, if you would go, if you would study the decisions of the annual conference regarding those things some years ago, there hasn't been a question up lately on those things. Mm-hmm. Why, they recommended a very simple and plain furnishings, but we've grown away from that some. I think I think that you would say that our members sort of reflect their income, the amount of income they make, although a member who lives simply and lives well below his income, and people know it, why he is, I think, held in high respect by members as someone who is using his money in a way that a Christian should. He's possibly being liberal and charity and so on, and not spending it just for show and for his own. Everybody that can afford it lives comfortably, but the unnecessary things, I don't think though we're strict about criticizing members if they would have unnecessary furnishings and things. More of our members are starting to get interested in antiques, and some even buy and sell those things, and some have a lot in their homes, and so you couldn't hardly call an antique a necessity, although they can be used too. Wife has a few items, but they're things that someone else threw away, and after she cleaned them up, why, someone else wished that they had them, you know, but then they're things that she uses too, and she don't feel this right getting something that has no use at all just to look at.
Restrictions on having decorative things in the house, like paintings or photographs or little statues or anything like that. Is that pretty much left up to the individual?
Yes, I think it is. It's left up to the individual. Now, years ago, that would have been more. You would have been subject to criticism by people who visited you. You know, your friends had visited you and so on. But today, there's not much said on that. There is a question up now about slide projectors and tape recorders and things like that. There's a few that think that that's to be classed with movies and television and radio. It's to be classed right with that. And then there's, and by the way, we never officially have approved phonographs. Although some of these things that annual meeting has never, a few things that we fully accept today never has been permitted or accepted by the conference rules.
Oh, so some members have phonograph?
Yes, some do. I'm not acquainted with them around here, but it depends where you live. Some would have.
But there probably, would there be any restriction on what kind of songs they would play on?
Well, it's hard to restrict those things, but everybody's, really, if they were to ask what kind of music they should play on it, they would be told they shouldn't even have a machine. See, so so usually a person who has one, though, why, if they are confronted with it, why, they'll say that all they're using it for is religious music or something like that. Usually, mm-hmm. So I think that that's probably what those who have do use it for to start with, and then I'm sure their children take it over and
right.
Mm,
or will they, if they can have phonographs now, are there still restriction against musical instruments, playing a musical
instrument? It all depends on what it is. Smaller instruments are tolerated, where the bigger ones aren't.
Like a harmonica or something?
Oh, yes. Harmonica. I've been in homes that had accordion, a smaller accordion, not the big expensive kind.
The little squeeze.
Yeah. The one with several keys on the side, but not the big. I would say those under $50, $60, $70, not the $200, $300, and $400 regular instruments.
Do any of them have guitars?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Usually, it's the young people that aren't members that are permitted those things. Now there are some that become members and have had those kind of instruments, and maybe they don't dispose of them. They keep them, but they usually never play publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they have their own group of members in, they still don't play, just even for the group, because they more associate that with the those that aren't members and their entertainment.
Right.
We have here a small organ. It's one of these electronic or whatever. It just sits on a table, you know, just a little one. And a number in the community, several in the community have those kind, but you just start to get in the more expensive ones that stand on legs and a regular seat up to them, all that. Why, it wouldn't be long you'd hear about that, if that was. The children can't afford those kind of things. The parents is beginning to take a hand in that.
Is it mostly used by the children?
Well, I sure do. I love music, and I do too, and my wife does some, and the children do too. I guess we all take turns.
Do you play from the books that you use in singings, or?
Oh, I do. Although
I
like to just play from memory, and I just don't care to have any book. I have an ear for music, and I can remember all the songs I ever had. And I can remember the music, but not the words. And the wife, she needs to go buy a book, but the children have it in their room, and they, I would say, play it most of the time anyway. It's kind of wore off, the newness, you know, to the parents, and the parents kind of leave it up to the children. Yeah.
Now, the hymn books that you use don't have any, in the church, they don't have the tunes written on them.
No.
I noticed they just maybe have the meter at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does everybody know those tunes by heart?
Yes. Children or people from infancy have heard those tunes, you know, and when somebody starts out the first few notes of a song, why, everybody knows what it is, and they can sing it.
And how many tunes would you say there are that
I couldn't say that. There'd be some of our song leaders here would could give you a pretty good guess on that, maybe, but I don't know. There are different songs. Of course, you can put different tunes to the song, but then we usually have our favorites. Each song kind of has its favorite tune to us, and we it's the one that's used the most, at least on that song.
Yeah, I was wondering if you might use the same tune for several different words, interchange.
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
now, a song like Joy to the World and Hark the Herald Angels Sing, is that in our hymn book we sing in church? I thought that one was too. We always use the one everyone uses on that. But then, several of the old favorite songs that everyone else knows. Well, we have just about one tune they put to it. The ones that are popular, too.
You know, Dr. Miller gave me several songbooks that use the singings, and I was comparing them to some. I have a songbook called The Sweet Songster, which is very similar to the Brethren Hymnal.
Well,
it has, I'd say, about half the songs in it are in the Brethren Hymnal, so it's really similar.
Yeah.
Let's see. The only other thing, is there's still a restriction on insurance?
No.
There isn't anymore.
That is left more up to the individual. Now, there are certain kinds of insurances that it's a legal requirement to have. Especially, well, it's not necessity, though. I'm thinking about automobile insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose most everybody has automobile insurance. And I doubt if many refuse that insurance on principle, on religious principle. They, well, what if you don't have it, maybe you feel like they can't afford it or something. But then I would say the kind of insurance that probably is least popular would be life insurance. Although I think that that's becoming quite popular too. I think it probably is. People don't talk about it much, but then.
Don't allow life insurance. In fact, they even went to court. I heard about paying Social Security because that's a form of life insurance.
Yeah.
Which I guess they've had a lot of.
It's called old age insurance, I believe, is the official title of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they had called it something else, then the Amish wouldn't have objected. I think we're accepting those things more. Back when some of these things first got started, they didn't seem of much practical value, you know, and as time went on, the members feel like it's there's no harm in some of these things. And it used to be one time we didn't have we didn't permit lightning rods on buildings, and that's a form of insurance. And because it was a form of insurance, it didn't seem appropriate for a Christian to do. But then that is one thing that our annual conference reconsidered in later years and reversed its position on. In most cases, the annual conference has disapproved of a thing, and the thing becomes accepted through general usage and not through a reversal of conference decision. But that happened to be one thing that the conference changed its mind on, and at the conference, which was held just a few years ago, there was some strong debate on the other side that a Christian shouldn't have lightning rods for protection because it's still a form of insurance, and you're not putting your faith in God that for protection, something like that. So, but there, that was just quite a minority view. It didn't prevail.
Well, I just have a few more questions. Probably getting tired.
No, that's all right. I'm learning a lot of things I never thought about for years and years.
Well, I guess it takes an outsider to do that because, not knowing anything.
Those things are all what I call little things, and in my mind is a lot of big things you haven't even touched, and I won't say a word about. You see, you're asking about a lot of little things of our daily lives and so on, and we take all that for granted and don't even think about it anymore, and then we go on to other points of Dr. Miller and I have lately been visiting and having discussions with theologians and brethren writers from other groups.
Uh-huh.
Did he say anything about that?
He mentioned that he had.
Well, we get into discussions with them about things. It is not at all an issue.
Oh,
see.
Yeah.
So the things that I've been thinking about so long, and now I'm relearning some of the things that we all take for granted, don't even think about.
Are they mainly religious points and broad matters?
We're discussing mostly history and interpretation of history of our on back. We have different viewpoints, you see, and it's worked out. And this last discussion we were at, or meeting, I had to give a talk on what the brethren position would be toward the state in a revolutionary context. And so I presented something then. And of course, it was. I think they agreed with it, but then it was something different than what some of the others are practicing anyway.
Uh-huh.
I think that the problem some are in today is they know what the Bible says, they know what the Christian's practice should be, but they don't know, or they don't have a denomination that wants to do that. They say this is the right way, but they can't find the energy to do the right way. I mean, it's been interesting, our discussions. And then we have, I think, the old orders have something to learn, too. The old orders wouldn't want to hear me say that, but I do think that we need to to listen as well as to talk. And
are these theologians that you're having the discussions with, are they from like the Church of the Brethren and
from other divisions of the church?
Mm-hmm. How many are there now?
Oh, let's see. There's our group, the Old Order, and there's the Church of the Brethren, and there's the First Brethren, headquarters at Ashland, and there's the Grace Brethren, headquarters at Winona Lake, and there's the Dunkard Brethren. They're a small group of about 1,000 members, and they're a little more. Now they have dropped out of several last meetings. They haven't sent any representatives. I suspect they won't. But
are they more conservative?
Yes, they're not as conservative as we. They're somewhere between we and the Church of the Brethren. They have accepted the Church of the Brethren missions and Sunday school and revival and those differences. But yet they've, where they disagree with the Church of the Brethren was in keeping all the points of church rites and ordinances and the plain dress, and that's about the main difference between them and the Church of the Brethren. So they have accepted more modern things than what we have.
Okay. So is the Church of the Brethren the most liberal of the groups?
Yes. That most people admit the Church of the Brethren themselves that they are today. They at the time of the divide, there was the Progressive Church, you know, that was a second one that was expelled in 1882. And their headquarters was established at Ashland, Ohio. Today, though, the Conservatives, which is the Church of the Brethren, has bypassed them in progressiveness. The Church of the Brethren for a while wanted to, worked pretty hard towards merger with other denominations. And then I feel like that movement among them might have been led by the most progressive among them. But then there was sort of a backlash, and the church refused to do that. And so they are, they have cooperated less with some of the ecumenical movement now than what at one time they did, back through the 50s and 60s.
So going from the most liberal to the most conservative, you've got the Church of the Brethren. What would be next?
Well, that would be the First Brethren at Ashland, Ohio, or the Grace Brethren up here at Winona Lake. Those two were one, and then they split in 1939. Okay. See, the Progressives had their division.
It gets more and more confusing.
It's all clear to me. Do you have a...
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
Are you going to leave? You're going to leave?
Thinking
about. Well, you'd be too late to get groceries.
Too late. You could get their bargain.
Well, you only got 25 minutes till they close, so you better either go or stay.
Do you need to stop? I can...
No, I don't have to. I was going
I'm getting
to,
a lot of information here.
Big talker.
Yeah, well, she pressed the right button this time. I didn't talk and talk. Like one of those jack-in-the-boxes, I just get carried away.
Oh, yeah. I know. Let me see. We've got... Yeah, still got some tape.
She's recording this, and so we keep on talking here now. We want to save her tape.
I keep forgetting about it and letting it go.
The Winona Lake group...
They split in 1939?
Yes. They felt like the denomination headquarters at Ashland was hiring two liberal teachers. Those who denied some of the fundamental principles of the Bible, and they showed from their writings of some of them that they hardly qualified, they felt, to be Christians because of their liberal leanings, and the church wasn't quite as evangelistic in trying to convert the unconverted, they felt. So they organized their own group with those principles in mind, and their college and their seminary, I understand, is very strict, and they examine their ministers and and all their students very thoroughly on the Bible to make sure that they're Orthodox. And they are evangelistic. They've got missionaries in a number of countries trying to reach other people.
So, Church of the Brethren, the First
Brethren.
Grace Brethren.
You know, they're two about the same.
Okay.
And then you want to come on down the line. The Dunkard Brethren, that's a split off of the Church of the Brethren.
Okay.
And then the Old German Baptists. And now the two next to the, or along with the German Baptists would be the Old Brethren that have automobiles. Uh-huh. Their acceptance of worldly things is about identical. There's a little difference. And then would be the two horse and buggy groups that are more conservative than us. And then there is some individuals who don't worship together, mm-hmm. who don't have any church, who are even more rigid on some things than the horse and buggy people. They can't get along with anybody. There's few individuals.
Are there any around here?
Oh, no, not right around here.
And they just split off from every church. And
yes, they couldn't seem to get along with the horse and buggy people,
mm-hmm.
or with us, or they just didn't feel at home anywhere because they didn't find anybody who looked at things exactly like they do. So, but as far I can say of the ones that I have met and talked to, they seem to have a good moral principle and things. They seem to be Christian. But I will say that they have lost their children oftentimes to no religious faith at all. Their children become, they don't have, you see, any association or any worship, and their children then have no association at all in a religious way. So a number of them go to no church.
Right. Well, I know that the church here in Covington seems to be really...
I give Sarah the keys. Oh, you have. What were you saying? The horse and buggy church?
No, the church. Your church here seems to have really good fellowship
mm-hmm.
and a very close-knit kind of community that give the children ideas.
I think, too. I like that about this church. Seemed like, of course, that's one thing you'll find in each one of our churches. We are, we know that the life of the church is this intensive fellowship that makes the seeking of outside fellowship unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it now. We have church here every other Sunday. And then members are expected, they're not required, but they're expected and taken for granted that everyone here, when we don't have church, we go to another around. And when we have church, there's others around that don't. And sometimes half our congregation, or at least a third, is visitors. Every time we have a meeting, we have visitors, about one-third of the congregation. So, and then the young people just come in, and the young people here can go anywhere else, any other church in the vicinity here. And there's about 16 or 17 churches here within close driving distance. So that close fellowship is what has enabled us to maintain our individuality. If it weren't for that, if we weren't able to get around from congregation to congregation, why, it'd be a different story.
Right.
We have used the modern conveniences to strengthen our fellowship.
Right. Well, the children, as far as religious education at home goes, is there a set time for teaching children in the home, or is it pretty much left up to each family?
It's left up to the family. They, of course, we recommend that children, just as soon as they're able to understand Bible stories, why, that they hear Bible stories, are read to them regular, and we recommend worship in the home, teaching the children to pray. But then we leave each family do that way as they wish.
Mm-hmm.
What we do have the close fellowship and our association in evenings and in spare time and all day Sunday is with the other church members, and therefore our children associate, except for school time, why they associate most altogether with members' children. Mm-hmm. And of course, most of our families recommend our children use their spare time to visit and associate with other members' children. So we, the children are socialized that way pretty strongly among us.
What about...
Now the situation is different in what we call isolated churches. I guess they left Danny here. Isolated churches gets down to a few families. The smaller the church gets, why, the greater the problem is of keeping the children. And it's only a matter of time until the church disappears. There's lately, within the last year, was a church sold up in near Camden, Ohio. Mm-hmm. That's near Canton. And I don't mean Camden, I mean Canton. Hartdale is a little town close to it. And when that church building was sold, why, there was one family, I think, there yet with children, and they have since moved over here by New Carlisle and are attending a church there now. Because of their children, why, they knew that if they didn't move away, why, their children would have nothing at all. In the line of our... So where we have the most association, the bigger churches or several in a vicinity, several churches, why, that's the advantage of keeping the children.
Right. What about older people? Do you find there's very many extended families living together, for instance, grandparents?
In the same house, you mean?
Yeah.
No, not like there used to be when we had the large family farms and big farmhouses. But now, a good many of us are... Careful you don't fall over backwards there. He's riding his bike, and if he goes over the other way, he can't catch himself.
Okay.
Sitting on one side. Why, we're changing that way, like other people are. Our families, the older ones go into nursing homes or retirement homes. And now there are some families that provide to look after their older folks, and that's one of the holdouts yet that we have. Some will go to extra effort. If they have a small house, they'll move a large house trailer alongside, or they'll go to extra expense or effort to be able to look after their old folks rather than put their old folks in a home or something. That is done quite a bit yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that way myself. I would like to do that for my folks.
Mm-hmm.
And
are they living in Indiana?
No, they live in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
But as it is, my father was a farmer. He retired, and they built a little house, new house, about 1963 or 4. And they're still well able to take care of themselves, even though they're both getting near 70. And Dad is 76. Mother's not quite that old yet.
Uh-huh.
But they were able to look after themselves. But I don't disapprove of these retirement homes and so on. But then, one disadvantage we feel with that is that the retirement homes accommodate all people,
mm-hmm.
people with television and so on. And those of our members who go to those places aren't always very happy. They feel like they're in an environment they can't control very well.
Mm-hmm.
They're not happy. Now, there has been some serious talk from time to time among us about having our own home for the elderly. And I would imagine that if it isn't too big a financial burden, we will have that within a few years.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering, because I know it's...
Then a problem would be if we were going to accept people outside of our fraternity, why would we... how much should we allow? We would have to have them to agree not to have a television, probably, you see, to keep and maintain a atmosphere that our people would want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that makes sense. Now, what should happen if a member of the congregation gets in trouble legally, if someone sues him? Now, is there, does the church have any say in this, or is this
yes.
pretty much...
Yes, if you won't find a member suing another member or another person, because that's not permitted. But if a member is sued, why, frequently the church will examine the matter and see whether or not the person who's being sued is at fault. Mm-hmm. And they judge in the matter whether or not that person can remain in fellowship with the church until things are settled, or whether that person ought to come under some discipline or what. It's more or less, that's a matter the local church can investigate, and so therefore there's no rule made for the whole brotherhood.
Has that ever happened in
the
church?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Both kinds of cases. I know a young man right now who's being sued. The case is this. He sends his children to a little religious school over here in Route 36. And the school board of Greenville, of Dark County, brought a suit against those who send their children there that live in Dark County. And because the state didn't qualify, they said the school didn't meet state standards. And you maybe have read some things in the paper about it. There's been news from time to time in the paper.
I think so.
Now, I'm not sure. I think that they're going to hand a decision down right soon, if they haven't already, from the state Supreme Court. That's as far as it has gone. Of course, the lawyer says he'll take it on to the United States Supreme Court, like he did, like the same lawyer did the Amish case.
Mm-hmm.
But this brother told me lately that his church had a meeting. And they looked into it and decided that in the case he wasn't doing anything himself that was out of place, so the church didn't feel to discipline him in any way.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been another case where the church really felt?
Yes. If the member seems to be at fault and seems to be a good reason for him being sued, why the church can have an option of several things they can do. They can. They can tell the member he shouldn't attend a communion. Well, he could attend as a visitor, but he shouldn't partake of any of the communion. That would be about the first step. If he is a official of the church and they feel it's a more serious matter, why, they could have him suspend his official duties until everything is settled, or something like that. Or they could relieve him of his official office, or if, all depending on the case, you see, if they felt like what the case merited. It'd be the members would listen to all sides of it and make up their mind on what to do. And there has been cases that way.
Had there ever been real criminal cases, or?
Oh, no. Well, yes. No, not in the sense of something the state was bringing against an individual. I don't think. I'm trying to think now whether it be a murder or something like that. I just don't know of any case among us of murder. There's been suicide, you know, and some things like that. But, now there has been serious cases where members would break serious Bible principle. Adultery or things like that, and then the church has to use a pretty harsh discipline until a member repents of that.
And how?
But then
that
isn't something the state finds any fault with, you know.
Oh yeah, no, they don't, unless somebody sues for divorce. What?
Yeah.
In church, though, you don't have divorce, or you don't recognize. Divorce.
No, we don't. Well, let's see, we claim to go right by the scripture on that.
Mm-hmm.
There are separations. There has been divorces where a party who left our church would divorce a person who's a member. If that party brings a divorce proceeding against a member, there's hardly anything a member can do, And the church doesn't put that member under any discipline, usually.
But
they can't remarry.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
If a member once is divorced by their companion, they don't remarry. If they do, why, they're not held as a member.
Has that ever happened?
I think there has. I think.
And.
But not often, because in just most all the cases, there's no separation. Even there's, I know of a few separations, but not very many.
Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of counseling if say a couple's having real problems and just can't seem to work it out themselves? Is the church?
Well, there's nobody appointed to be a counselor for those type problems, but we all know that the ministry is available at any time for that. In fact, we know, and that is part of the ministry, their job to be counselors. But there's nothing stated specifically that when one is having family troubles, why they're to go there. You see, nothing written on that, I don't believe.
But they could call on one of the elders of the church.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that we have certain older members in a church that would be qualified to, by their good life and years of experience, to give good advice like that too. It had ought to be somebody, or it needs to be somebody, of course, that the people having difficulty has confidence in.
Mm-hmm.
If both can have confidence in an older person, why that? But those kind of things we feel should be in a Christian church, ought to be able to be resolved there instead of having to go to counselors outside. But then I think that some of us use those too, if we need. I think we would go to marriage counselors, you call them, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know.
Especially in a small church where there's not many members, why, that might be where the best advice could be got, is from a marriage counselor, which would be more non-involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More objective, I guess, mm-hmm. to the
some of us, a few, I think, use psychiatry when it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
There's some difference of feeling about that. Some recognize that some psychiatrists are a lot better than others, I think.
Yeah.
So
that's, I guess, universally true.
Well,
there's some good and some bad, and some work for some
people.
From
our viewpoint, we would want a man that would be understanding to religion instead of a man that, of course, I don't understand it all very well, but I guess if he's a Freudian man through and through, why, that would disagree maybe with some of our belief, but I don't know if it would either. I haven't got into it enough to know.
Mm-hmm.
So, it all depends.
It's,
they have a tin pipe that's rubbing on
drilling that and dragging that. Mm-hmm. What about if a member gets in trouble financially? Can they go to the church to ask for aid, or they don't, or they go to public welfare? Or?
Well, a member is free to do that. If he's, I think that's kind of probably an unwritten rule or whatever, that the church is to look after the members who aren't financially able to take care of themselves, and they should be willing to, or should be free, feel free to go to probably the officials of the church, and the officials that look after that is the deacons. They look after that kind of work. Now, you find, though, that most people today have some pride, and they suffer before they would ask, most people do. And I think that in a church where the people are sensitive, why, the members and the deacons will be observant and make inquiry into the cases that way. And in most cases I know of, why, those things are well taken care of. Now, if the local church isn't big enough to take care of the need, why, they'll call on the ones farther away. And there has been cases of where somebody had a very rare disease, or needed lots of money while it was made public all over our brotherhood, and people contributed all over the United States. So until the need is met.
The deacons, who are the deacons of your church?
Well, if you'll notice, the minister sat at the table, well, right at the table, only on this side, facing the ministers, all of those on that bench are deacons.
Oh.
They start the songs. Now, Carl Bowman has one for a neighbor up there, and right on the hill, and that brick house in his lane. And we have as many or more or less, than the deacons. I mean, we usually have six or seven ministers, six or seven deacons, or in a big church.
How do you get to be a deacon?
By elect to office when somebody, that's the same type of election as we have for the ministry. Only when they feel a need, when the deacons are getting quite old and aren't able to handle the amount of work that they've got to do, or if they've been passing away and they need new help, or they have an election and then they state the need, and then the deacons are... we all kind of have in our mind all the work that a deacon needs to do, so therefore we think certain ones are better qualified than other ones for that kind of work. And then there's a vote taken for...
they serve for life or until they, you know, have to retire?
Well, there's no retirement. They serve for life. It may be that towards the last, most or all of their work is taken over by younger people, but they still retain the office till they die.
And what's their
function? Same way with the ministry.
What do they do? What kind of work is that?
Well, you might say they're housekeepers in a lot of the way. They look after housekeeping work.
Mm-hmm.
They the communion and the preparation of that, and looking after the poor, and the reading of the scriptures in public meeting, and the starting of songs. They do the most of that, although the ministry is free to start the songs too. Especially when there's not many deacons at a meeting. If it happens to be they're not there, why the minister starts songs. And if there's not many ministers or deacons, why the lady can start songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of a case where a sister starts songs because there's not many men. It's a small church. So, but that's a rarity because most of our churches have men that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the only time where our sisters make a noise in church. I mean... they sing, of course, but I mean, you know, take a part.
There wouldn't
in,
be a
in more than a
woman,
passive way.
There wouldn't be a woman deacon or a minister.
No, not yet, and I don't foresee one in the immediate future. I don't believe we're old-fashioned on that line. I feel like there'll be now. There's one thing women can do, and that is write. We our church paper. Anybody can write to it. And about every issue carries one, two, or three articles by women. And they're very good writing. I would like to see more participation by women in some things, but I don't know how to say that. And since my voice is gone on tape, I'm not going to say much. Because I think there's some very well capable, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, what, how many ministers does the Covington Church have?
Well, let me see. One, two, three. Seven, I believe.
Seven.
I believe it's seven.
That's quite a big number.
Yeah. There are a few that have more than that, I believe. I've got each year I make up a directory of all of our churches. Did anybody give you a copy of that
directory?
Yes,
I have that, yes.
It has the lists, names of ministers, and the deacons. I don't believe you have that.
No, I probably don't have that. I have the location of the different churches.
It'll just take me a second to get
that.
Okay. Modesta District, for instance, is the largest church in our brotherhood. They have 349 members, I believe it is. Right at 350. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They have 9 ministers, and they have 11 deacons. But with that many members, the work is just, they need to share up more. You see, nobody serves full time. Everyone has their own occupation. But you'd be surprised, those who are financially able spend a lot of time sometimes in the work of the church. Some of these ministers just spend week after week traveling and because they're much in demand, good speakers, you know, and they do that all at their own expense. Although if they if they're not well financially fixed, why, and they're especially good speaker, why the other churches will bear some of their expenses. But that's all done in a private way. There's nothing done publicly or organized about that kind of aid. Now, we do have some kind of aid the church gives. When there's a small church, for instance, that needs to have meeting held by ministers from other churches, and they share up and decide who shall go there and so on, there's a fund set up to defray the expenses of ministers who go there. And there's those several of those kind of things. But this other that I was speaking of, why, a man does as much as he can according to what his time and finances will permit. Let's see if I missed it on Covington. Yes. 7.
That's
what.
Good. Is this something I can have?
Oh, yes, you can have that.
Oh, thank you.
It gives the number of members up here of that that's in that church, and of course that changes each year.
What does the E stand for?
That's the office that they're in. E stands for elder.
Uh-huh.
And number, there's number 2 here. Here's number 2.
Uh-huh.
That is the second degree of the ministry, and number 1 is the first degree of the ministry.
So you start out as a number 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to a number 2 and then to an E. How do you do that?
Well, when you start at number 1, that's the first, after you're elected into the ministry, you can't baptize people, neither can you marry people. You're not authorized to do that by the church. It's more or less a trial in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And after a man proves faithful in that a while, there's no set time. Some churches wait longer, and some advance their young men sooner. And then they'll advance them to the second degree, and there they can marry people, they can baptize, and I can't think of all the duties that involve there.
Mm-hmm.
A few more things they're authorized to do. Then, when they become an elder, why... they can conduct a communion meeting. They can lead the communion meeting and so on. And they can, and it's their duty to assist other churches in discipline when they need to have outside help. And also when there's elections held at places, important work of the church, why only elders are asked to help conduct those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a first or a second degree minister could go and be present, but he wouldn't be able to make decisions and so on with the elders.
Is that elected too then, when you say you were a second degree minister and you...
Well, it's a service. They install them in another degree. If they're in the first degree, they'll have a service at which they install them in the second degree.
Uh-huh.
And they'll tell them what their extra duties and responsibilities will be in the second degree of the ministry, and they ask them whether they'll accept that or not. They don't just take a man and
so maybe some wouldn't necessarily want to.
Well, in most every case, I think they do accept it. But then that is sort of understood when a member receives baptism that he will submit to any work the church gives him to do. Whatever work that'll be, that's sort of understood. So a man who would refuse something, it would look like he was wasn't keeping his promise to what the church originally asked him, you see.
I see.
But it's still on a basis. Now, there are cases where individuals can accept more responsibility. There are certain cases, and that is excused, probably. And once in a while, there are things that I can't really think of what a reason would be, but if a man has a reason, and it's acceptable with all, why, he's excused readily from more responsibility. But then that isn't very often ever happens.
Well, I've got all my questions answered. Do you have anything that you might want to tell me about the church, the brethren, that I forgot to ask?
Well, I don't know.
I know there's a lot that I didn't ask, as you said, as far as, you know.
Yeah, and after you leave, I'll think of a lot of ways I should have said it better than what comes to me.
No.
I'll probably be writing you from now and then to correct this or that I remember I said.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to turn this off. 'Cause I... Yeah.